Hello, everybody. Another podcast done. A couple of announcements got away in the beginning. We have more apparel and a lot of it. So if you've been wanting to get yourself a Cue It Up t-shirt or a long sleeve t-shirt, because we have those now and they are insanely comfortable, very soft and just incredibly comfortable, you're going to want one of these. Or you want a hoodie, please let me know. Will be a first come, first serve. And for the next week, what we're going to do is we're going to give a free Cue It Up patch to all orders purchased in the next week. So if you would like something, you'll get a free patch to go with it. So please reach out if you would like one. And even if you do not want one, get one anyways, because I have way too many and I need to get rid of them. So please reach out if you'd like them. And other than that, I guess that's really all I have to get out of the way in the beginning. So without further ado, let's get started with the podcast today.
I'm a real deal. I shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
Yeah, like we're like supposed to be like taking off in a car or something like that.
I like if that. Everybody sits really still, then Nate's going to think that all the screens are frozen and he's going to shit himself.
No, because I can hear your stupid voice.
Just... not gonna know.
Yeah, you breathe so damn heavy and creepily that I think even if you stood like quiet, I think we'd be able to hear you.
That's just my telephone voice.
Oh, hey, Demi, I've seen you a little while.
How you doing, Rob?
Good. Last week we mentioned some juniors at a tournament, and somehow your name came up as being the coach of one of the players. Who was that player and how long have you been coaching him?
Well, there's been a few, but I'm assuming you're talking about Hank the Tank, Harry Lennon.
Yeah.
I've been working with him for, I've known him for a few years, but I've been working with him as a coach for about a year now. And yeah, when I first started working with him, he played pretty good eight ball. He could run out the open balls and he knew how to move his ball around for eight ball, stop shots, you know, minimal cue ball movement, stop shots, rolls, stuns. But when it came to nine ball and moving his cue ball up and down the table, he didn't have a very developed skill set. He couldn't really run a lot of balls in order, a lot of, you know, two and three ball runs. And after we worked together for a month or two, we played, and I'll never forget, I led him to the table and he ran two tables on me. Last time we played, he broke and ran three on me. I'll tell you, playing nine ball, big table, nine ball move, you know, I was pretty stunned how fast he's put this stuff into use. So he's been playing really well. He's not the best necessarily in the country. There's a few other really good players, you know, from California and, you know, South Dakota too. But anyway, but he's one of them. And he won the BEF out there. So pretty proud of him.
Yeah, he won the 14 nice. And under.
Congratulations, buddy.
It's pretty cool stuff.
Not bad, man. Proud of, good. I'm telling you, wait till the 2027 Moscone Cup. We're going to have some we're going to have some players.
Do you think some players,
you bet,
players coming out of South Dakota has anything to do with that's where Shane is from? Notoriety?
You know what? And maybe. I mean, I'll tell you what. I've got one. There's one from South Dakota, Eddie and Vondrell. I think his last name is just to have to make sure I get it right. He's 13. He plays extremely well as well. Like, I mean, really good, really crisp. Very good firepower, you know, very stunning what he could do on the pool table. And I worked with him too. And he won, I don't know if it was VNEA. I'm sorry, I can't remember which one he won. He won a tournament out there too somewhere, and I'm mixing him up now. But anyway, he wants to be on the Moscone Cup, and I believe he'll get there. And so he's 13. So that's two 13-year-olds. And then there's the one from California. Now I'm on the spot. Is it Adrian Prasad? Is that right? Anyway, there's like four 13-year-olds we have right now in the U.S. that I think are just playing phenomenal pool, and like not good for kids, but good for anybody. They're playing good sets. Like if you watch a race to seven on a big table, and you think that they played a good set, that's pretty impressive. And they're all 13, and I think of among our 18 and under players, I think these 13-year-olds are some of the best. So wait 3-4 years, and I think, you know, before they're 18, they're going to be Moscone Cup ready.
Jim, you have anything to say about that? You scared?
Nice. I like
that. Well, you know, I'm kind of glad because
4 years
we, but over here in Europe, we do have one or two young players who might be pretty good. So, you know, Just one or two. So it could be a close match.
We don't want none of that smoke, Jim. We don't want none of that. We did mention, Mike,
last week that you've never bet on an American team at the Moscone Cup. Is that correct, that you only bet on the European team?
No, I ain't mad at my money like that. Hell no.
He's not throwing his money away.
Depends how many points he gets on the wire. If he can get eight on the wire,
2 years. But yeah. Oh, I mean, of course, if I'm getting some games that's too juicy to pass up, I'm going to take it. But no, Europe's going to be what, 3-1 this year, roughly. You got to be like 3-1.
I think
they're going to play.
Well, they're going to be heavy favorites.
When was the last time you saw an American go deep in a tournament? I mean, come on, let's be realistic here. I don't even know.
I mean, Sky in the world. I mean, Sky went to the semis, right? Or the quarters, maybe?
Quarters. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. And I mean, we don't know yet.
Who we pick, too, right? I mean, there's
Fedor's over there getting ready for some tournament. All you see is Jason, and the little time he's in Europe, going and prepping, snapping off a GB9. Like, all these Europeans are just constantly staying in gear and staying tournament ready and matching up. And then the real hardcore ones like Fedor coming back over here to get back in it afterwards, right? And everyone's about to come over for the U.S. Open. But what is the American team doing? I mean, I don't want to keep on beating a dead horse, but what are they doing?
Nate, do you have a uniform? Because you're going to be there.
I don't know.
So are we going to be able to pick you out of the crowd?
At the Moscone Cup?
Yes.
I hope to be belligerent and drunk and stupid enough to be picked out. Yeah, that's my goal.
I'll help you with that.
I'm gonna say if I'm not, I suspect I'm gonna be close enough to Jim that he could, you know, he's a proper professional when it comes to being a drunk, belligerent idiot.
I'll get more airtime again, Rob. Ask him the question.
I get more airtime than most of the players.
Mike, I have a question for you, Mike. So I overall agree. The Europeans are beasts. They're a constant action in terms of tournaments. The U.S. players, it's not as clear that they don't match that work ethic and that competition. What about Tyler Steyer, though? He's I feel like Tyler's, you know, in terms of being an up-and-comer, he's going to all these tournaments, the USA, you know, 10-ball tour, and I've seen him everywhere. Every time I go to a tournament, he's there. He's always matching up. What do you think about Tyler's work ethic and tournament competitiveness compared to a European?
I think he's one of
the most European.
I think he's one of the only ones.
Yeah.
He's got a very European style, very European work ethics. I think he's the hardest working American player. Yep. He's the definition, like what Jim was talking about off air about being a professional. I think Tyler is that. And then some. I know he can be kind of, from what I've heard, kind of a pain in the ass to deal with as far as on a team side of things. But the guys, he just wants to win. And those are the guys I want in my foxhole whenever I'm about to go to battle against, you know, something like a Moscone Cup style. You know, I want guys who are going to put in the work, not be prepared when they show up, but put in the work ahead of time. And I'm not just talking about screwing the queue together a week and a half before it's time to go and get ready. Like, Tyler's doing it the right way throughout the entire year, you know. And I don't see any other American going and working that hard. It amazes me. But the funny part is he probably won't even get a look because of stuff off the table, you know. Yeah. If he gets in,
he's going to have to qualify for it. And, you know, if they made a list of, I mean, I guess I don't even know. I know Matchroom said they were going to do their rankings and stuff, and that's how they're going to pick their players. But has that started yet? I mean, I'm not seeing any official Matchroom rankings for the U.S.
Even in Europe, what are they doing? I think in Europe, Jim, what are they doing? Like two off of rankings and then three are just going to be picks?
Yeah, the last information I got was two off the rankings, three wild cards, and the world champion was guaranteed if it was European. So Albin is in as world champion, and then it'll be two off the rankings after the US Open. Two off the ranking, and then two wild cards.
Probably Alex. Probably Alex might make one of those.
We're already making
US Open is massive points. Alex didn't get a huge amount of the Champions League pool, really. Catchy will be up there. He got a final at the Champions League pool. So if he goes deep in the US Open,
is he going to be able to make it? He's missed the last two matchroom events.
Well, I think
of visa issues, right?
Yeah, because he doesn't know how to organize a visa, apparently.
Apparently, yeah.
I mean, these pool players, you stick them in front of a pool table, you stick them in front of a pool table, they can do anything they want. You ask them to live life on a daily basis, and they're completely useless, the majority of them.
Pool players?
Yeah, pool players. But going back to Tyler, we off air, I was asked a question about, you know, what kind of Fargo do you need to be at if you want to consider yourself either professional or semi-pro or whatever. Tyler might not have the highest Fargo out of all the players that you would put in the mix for a potential spot on Team USA. But one thing you can guarantee is at any situation that he's in during that match, he's going to give the best he possibly can. And he's going to play to that Fargo or slightly higher. And he's going to be ready. There have been, and I'm not going to mention any names, but there have been situations in the last 5 years, 6 years, where certain players who should be stepping up, as soon as the running goes a little bit against them, they fold and they're not anywhere near the level. They're not even trying anymore. They're giving up. No. I'm not throwing anybody under the bus.
I think the list is a little bit shorter. The list is shorter if you talk about people who didn't do that.
Yeah, that team has fallen apart as far as giving it their best shot in a few of the additions. You know, after day one, things go against them. It doesn't go quickly for them in day two. They don't get quickly into it, and then the heads just drop, and they're not interested anymore. And the one thing you can guarantee from Tyler is that won't happen with him. You know, and these are the guys you want that are willing to try and fight back and have a go at it, you know?
Yeah. Jim, that Tyler and Neal's match was as important as any match in the Stanley Cup.
People go back to that Tyler Neal's match, but I mean, that was still, it was important, but it was still early on in the event. You know, it's been for me the situation has been more in those years that, you know, day one doesn't really go well, or the US end up 3-2 down, Europe get through there, and then Europe get a fast start in day two, and you get the idea that halfway through day two, this match is finished. You just don't see the USA team getting together and saying, guys, come on, let's get back into this match. Let's fight, let's show some pride, let's show some heart. Maybe we'll get stuffed, but we're going to give it our best shot. There was matches that were getting played, certainly at the last Moscone Cup, where you thought, really? Do you realize people are watching? You know, I mean, what are you doing?
I'd argue that those 2 years that the Europeans lost, it seemed like they didn't take it serious enough. That's what I would go and say, because there was times it was swinging against them where they were just like, "Ah, we got it." You know, they weren't even sweating about it, and they took them for granted. I'd say,
yeah, so, they did, and that was a situation where, you know, Marcus as the team captain had been used to it being easy and had never really had to fight against and fight back and get his team pepped up. It was always easy for him, and then you saw that the tables turned. And then Marcus then has to change his approach and get his team fired up again. And for whatever reason, he wasn't able to do that because he'd never had to before, you know. And you saw it. Everyone just assumed, oh, it'll be all right. I was sitting in the crowd after day three, and I'm thinking, yeah, but we're still going to win this. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
And it just never happened. Yeah. You know. Yeah.
It ruined Christmas for me, let me tell you.
No, it ruined Christmas for your girls.
This is how much they don't want Tyler on the team. They pick Corey. You know, Bergman gets out and they bring in Corey. Tyler was ready. Tyler could have passed the COVID test and hopped on a flight to Europe. You know, it's politics. I mean, but the kid should have been in there, in my opinion.
Yeah, but there's also, you know, yeah, we could beat this horse every single time we get on these podcasts. It is a hot topic. I think we all have the same kind of opinion on it, that, you know, they're not picking the right team, you know, for whatever reason. They're not putting they're leaving people out. There's people that are being, kind of discriminated against. Certain people are actually calling names out and saying these people will never be in the team again and stuff like that. And it's wrong, in my opinion. There's part of me that almost hopes that all these players who have actually been named and who are obviously not welcome, that they are the ones that qualify, and then they don't get the opportunity to leave them out. Kind of thing, you know? I don't know.
Well, there's a couple players I wouldn't mind seeing make it. There's also a few that I think are banned for a good reason and should not be on that stage.
Absolutely. There are, and again, I go back to this whole professional thing. There are players that have been in the Moscone Cup over the years that do not take it too, do not take it seriously. They see it as a free paycheck. Even if they lose, they're still going away with a paycheck kind of thing. They're getting on TV. That's good for the sponsors. But they're not good for the game, or they're not doing what they need to do. They're not backing it up. They're just going there for 4 days in a year, and then they bum around for the rest of the year doing nothing, hoping they get invited back the year after. And for Team USA, that went on for years. I mean, Johnny Archer even mentioned it, and Johnny's not one of these guys, let's just say, but Johnny Archer even mentioned it, that back in the early 2000s, he said he knew he was in every year. So he was just waiting for the phone call. He's like, yeah, I knew I was going to be in every year, and Shane's heard it. He knows he's going to be in every year. I'm not saying that he's not professional. He's one of the guys that he keeps his nose clean and does the right things. But if you have a situation where you have a Team USA where you're only talking about every single year, you're only talking about a maximum of seven players, there are always going to be players that know. Sky knows he's going to be there again. Doesn't matter what he does. Sky could break, lose an arm, and he's, you know, go blind in one eye, and he'd still get in the team this year. He knows he's in. Yep. You know. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate. Nobody in the European team knows they're in. Filler probably feel like he's going to be in every Alvin. Single time. Jason, well, Alvin knows, Alvin, but he didn't before the World Championships. Yeah. Alvin has missed out. Yeah. Alvin has missed out in the last few years. You know,
but he worked his ass really off. Like he earned it, though. It's not like he's resting on his laurels. He won the CLP. He won the World Championship. So I mean, it's not just where you're sitting on the couch and you're just like, I know that phone's going to ring.
Yeah, exactly. So Team Europe, every single year, Team Europe are going in there ready to play because every single player has knows they've had to work their ass off to get above all these other great players who thought they were going to have a chance. Whereas Team USA, like you said, where are they? What are they doing? You know, we haven't seen much of them. You know, we see Federer in the States. We see all these, you know, what are the rest of what Team USA doing? Because they don't seem to have to really, or a number of them
Federer
don't really seem
more
to have
tournaments
to prove.
In the States than the American team does.
Yeah, because it's free money.
Besides Tyler. Yeah, it's free money. Yeah.
It's free money. Yeah.
Tyler went deep this week, and I don't know if y'all saw the Brendan Crockett, but Tyler had a bit of a run.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. So actually, why don't we jump into that now? We'll use that as a segue to jump into this. We'll talk about the Brendan Crockett really quickly because, the field was absolutely stacked from top to bottom. When Jeffrey DeLuna doesn't cash in a tournament, you know it's pretty strong. So first place, James Aranis goes undefeated throughout the tournament. John Mora, you want to talk about like just absolutely running through a field. He beats – we'll talk about his in a second because I think he's kind of been off the radar a little bit since COVID. I mean, as far as like playing a lot of these big events, and he crushed this tournament. Tyler gets third place. Carlo Beato gets fourth place. Warren Kiamko and Omar El-Shaheen, fifth, sixth. Shane Van Boning and Corey Duell, seventh, eighth. And then Roberto Gomez, Ian Castillo, Eddie Geronimo, and Sean Turgot, 9 through 12. Pretty strong field for, I guess, a $10,000 added event. That's a lot of money added. So props to Oscar over there. It's hard times, but that's a huge event. That's massive. That's a great tournament with a great field.
Yep.
So. And I guess talking really quickly about John Mora quick, I know on the B side, well, I'll get to it, but I guess is looking at the top 12, is there any surprises that you guys are looking at seeing, you know, this person should have placed higher or this person had a great tournament? Any overwhelming thoughts?
Just real short. It's pretty obvious. I'm proud of James. I mean, for winning the thing. It just seems like Nate and Rob, it seems like about a year ago or a year and a half ago, we were talking about like, hey, James is playing so good and how come he doesn't never get there and when's his time? And then all of a sudden, like he made the finals of a Predator 10 ball like a year and a half ago. And then lately, he's been playing just better and better. You know, of course, I was down in Virginia, I don't know, 6 weeks ago. He won that tournament down there, you know, beat Alex in the finals and it kind of played really, really well. Now he won this thing. And, you know, this is no – you know, World Championship field or U.S. Open field. However, when you've got a handful of guys, you know, that are, whether it's Omar El-Shaheen or Shane or, you know, as long as you've got a handful of guys like that, you know, the difference between cashing in a tournament like that and going all the way and winning a tournament like that, it takes not just a different level of game, but a different level of mental game and poise and preparedness and willingness to take it, desire. So I think that James is kind of coming on strong. This isn't a major event, but it's another one of these where he shows that he's no longer up and coming. I think it's his day, and I look forward to seeing how he does over the next handful of majors. And I'd be curious, Jim, you know, how do you think James is stacking up against, you know, the Europeans in terms of if he was to play the U.S. Open or some of these big 10-ball events?
Well, for me, he's always been one of these players. I mean, you talk about, you know, he's been getting deep in tournaments but never quite snapping one off, and it was all a matter of time. And when he does that, for me, that comes down to consistency in tournament play, you know, because if you listen to, you know, the names that Nate reeled off about who he'd have to beat in the final, who he'd have to beat in the semifinal, who he'd have to beat in the last eight, to win a tournament like that, you've got to go through probably four very, very strong players that are all capable of beating you to get that far. And I think with somebody like James, and it happens with most players while they're coming through the ranks, you know, they'll throw in that one bad result and that's that one bad match within those four, and they're not going to get past somebody like a Shane or a Tyler or a, you know, or an Al-Shaheem. But he's managed to do it this time. Tournament play is all about that consistency. How he would stack up in Europe, very difficult to say. He'd have to come over and do it. You know, I think a US Open is wide open for a lot of players. US Open's all about how you handle the venue and the tables. You know, the playing on these, I mean, under those predator, under the matchroom lights, you know, if you start getting deep into tournaments, there's going to be a lot of players like James who haven't done that before. And that affects a lot of players. And a lot of players handle it very easy, you know, and you think, wow, this is, they're playing as if, you know, they're playing on the club table. Other very, very good players struggle a lot. So now the US Open is going to be that kind of arena. It's going to be quite intimidating for a lot of players. But he's got the talent, he's got the ability, you know, but a lot of players have got that. You know, he needs to get the mental side of it down, he needs to get his consistency, and he needs to find that level and keep it there. You can't be throwing it in a US Open, even in the last 32, you're going to come up against a player who's going to punish you if you make mistakes. If you don't bring your A game, you're going to get punished and you'll go out very, very early in that tournament. He's one of many, many players that can go deep in that tournament. Can he win it? I don't know. Who would have said Al-Shaheem would get to the final of the World Championships, you know?
Who would have said?
But he handled it. He was the guy who benefited from other players dogging it in that arena. You know,
he dogged himself. He had a shot on the TV table to the end. Like, he stayed off the TV tables. Who would have known how he would have gone and responded playing in that earlier on? You know, would he have been able to go and keep that mental toughness, you know, if it would have been earlier on? But maybe that was an advantage for him. Who knows?
Yeah, he got his semi. Maybe because you saw in his semi-final, he struggled in the beginning of his semi-final against Shnigoki, against Oliver. I can't pronounce it. Now, if he had done that earlier in the tournament, let's say he got drawn against one of the big guys who've played on that table and in those things, like a Jason or like a Shane, you know, even a Fedor. If he played like that, they would have ate him up on that table. But Snigoki also was his first time, so he got away with it. He got away with it against Melling. He doesn't win that match against Melling if it's on the TV table, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was going to say, to be fair to him, you don't know how he would have handled it.
Well, but Chris can kind of be
We think he would have.
I believe, based on how he handled, but it's also a semi-final as well, so that puts the extra pressure on as well. But the table did play different than everything else. Again, you've got to have it up here. They've all got, so many players have got it in their arm, but it's what you've got up here that will dictate whether or not you can snap up one of these big tournaments.
Yeah,
it's going to be the same guys are going to be the favourites again. As always, but there's always somebody that comes through that goes deep that maybe people weren't thinking about. Why not Aranis? Why not?
Well, I think my quick thought on Aranis is that I think that he reminds me very similar to Kazakis, which is I don't put Aranis in the same category as a Filler or a Fedor, you know, the top. But I do think that he is in that category of guys that are just that one tier down. And when we look at Kazakis, we look at someone who for a while had a lot of game and did a lot of things right, but just wasn't quite realizing his full game in terms of results. I think that we saw a little bit of that from James a couple of years ago, and I really feel that James has smoothed out in terms of comfort in these venues and also in terms of just comfort in the finals and belief in himself and just being ready to take it. So I think that the same way Kazakis, you know, drilled Shane in the finals this year, I think that James might be ready to win if he gets opportunities. Now, he's also not filler. He's not Vedor. If he's playing great players that deny him opportunities, of course he doesn't have to win. I'm not saying he's going to win the U.S. Open. Like you said, he's one of many players. But I put him among the categories of players that are ready to take it if the opportunity presents itself. I no longer think he's up and coming. I think it's kind of the errata season, and now he's in the mix.
No, let's hear from you, Rob. What do you think?
He's definitely in the mix. And I like that not the exact same player is winning all these tournaments every single time. It's different.
How depth is the field of pool right now?
It's different players. And like some are up and coming, some have been there for a while, but it's somebody different each time. And I look at that and I say, you know, Jim said earlier that 750 and up, you think is a top player, a top pro, a competitive tournament player. And I personally can see, because pool is a game between your ears, like Jim said, and they are, even though they're great at pool, they're all human beings underneath. And you have a life outside of pool, not just pool. Every player does. Some less, some more. So what is your life like at that particular time? If you're over 750, there isn't a tournament you can't win if you go into that tournament 100% dedicated to what you're doing. And they're all that competitive at that. I mean, what's the difference between that? Nate will tell you mathematically what the difference is, and Demetrius will. They can give you that figure. But desire? You can't measure that. You can't measure concentration. What, are you going to put a meter inside something between their ears? So any one of those, Arenas is one of them. But any player above 750, I think, coming up, I can't wait for the U.S. Open. I really can't. I don't get excited too much about watching pool. Really, I don't. But this one I'm kind of excited about because there's going to be a lot of European players in there.
No, we hope they can travel. Yeah. But I think pool, I'm trying to think of a sport that's more difficult to dominate than pool. It's so difficult to dominate this game because there's so many different factors, especially when you're talking about playing nine ball and stuff like that. You know, the rolls can go against you. You know, you get these bits of luck. It's such a brutal game mentally. It really is mentally.
Golf is probably a good.
Yeah, the only thing
golf. Yeah, golf is there as well. But I mean, you're.
But with golf, you play for a few days, right? And so you have a cumulative score for a few days. So if somebody outperforms you for two holes,
right,
then it doesn't eliminate, pool being double elimination. If you get outplayed, you don't even have to play bad. Somebody outperforms you one day. I would think if golf was such that you played one hole against one other person and then you advance and then one other hole against one other person, and each of these people you're playing off of is capable of hitting a hole in one, and you got to keep beating them one hole at a time. That's different than having, a full 18, holes to like average out your score. Because if pool was such that it was like some 20 man round robin where you played 19 matches, the best players would always rise to the top. But when it's double elimination, especially with the roles and the things out of your control where you don't always get opportunities to shoot, golf maybe is tough, but I just think that there's more variance in pool because of the format. It's harder to dominate because of the format.
I get what you're saying. My point about golf is only the fact that it's you can't find anybody who dominates it. Every single weekend, there's a new major winner. There's a new tournament winner. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the year, if there's 40 golf tournaments by the end of the year, major golf tournaments, there's probably going to be about 33 winners. And that's I'm just going off the track record of what the golf is. It's crazy how many winners there are and how many, like, every single weekend, a new player comes up. Xander Schauffele just won the Olympics, the Olympics gold, and that's his first ever major win. Yet he's been on the radar for how long as being like the next big thing. I mean, just like when you look at, and Jim can talk to this, just like when you look at all these junior players coming up, and I don't even want to say junior, but young players coming up out of Europe, every single one of them are looking for one breakout, and next thing you know, they're the next Josh Filler. Or the next Fedor Gorce, or the next Eklanti Kaci, or who knows, maybe now the next Alexander Kazakis. I mean, he's not exactly young, but the idea is he just got his first win. Let's see what the next part of his career looks like. He could end up becoming the next great European player. Who knows?
Yeah. And you don't know which one it's going to be as well. because, like you say, it just takes one tournament, one boost, and somebody just jumps straight in there and they get this kickstart to their career, and then they're off and running.
Or who knows? Maybe it's one Chris Melling who dogs a three ball against you, and next thing you know, that was just enough of a spark to give you the confidence in the big moments next time. Yeah. You know, Chris Melling's never supposed to miss that shot after he missed the nine ball against him in the quarterfinals. Yeah. You know, maybe that's enough for a spark for Omar. He's had a good run since. Who knows?
I'm looking forward to all these tournaments. I want to see these guys go. And I'm hoping every tournament. I have my favorites that I'm looking to get far in the tournament. But I'm also always hoping that by every last eight, there's a new name in there. You know, that you get to learn about, and we get to see them on the TV tables. You know, for me, I enjoyed the semi-final Omar against Oliver because I've never really had the chance to watch these guys live. So it was great to see them. And I want that in every tournament. I want there to be a new face coming through, you know. And I'm interested to see who it's going to be at the US Open, because I'm quite sure the last eight are not going to be, you know, eight Moscone Cup players or eight world champions. There's going to be a couple of surprises in there. That would be a surprise as well.
the game makes a huge difference, because, I mean, nine ball is a lot of you got to go and get the rolls, whereas 10 ball, you know, you tend to have a little bit more, because the break is so important in 10 ball, and you get a real similar layout. And I mean, James is Filipino, but what I heard that they were, a lot of the Pinoys came over here like last minute trying to get out of the Philippines so that way they don't get stuck over there on lockdown. So I think that's why we had a big wave of guys all come in at the same time. So for him to show up and kind of last minute and then essentially go wire to wire, have a strong comeback against Tyler, who was breaking phenomenal, you know. And with James, I mean, Jim and Demetrius touch base on it. It's mental with James. He's got all the ability in the world. It's all here. Go look at his match against Kevin Chang if you don't think it's mental. You know, I've talked with James about this before. You know, sometimes it comes in waves, but the more that he'll go and play, the deeper that he goes, the tough opponents that he goes and faces, it'll continue to build him up over and over again. Mm-hmm. I know he had a real tough match that I think was a classic, the first U.S. Open that Matchroom had against Niels, if I'm not mistaken, because that was on a TV table. I was about to book a flight, and that thing ended up being just a barn burner where he came back. But James is, I mean, nine ball, you got to get a lot of more lucky, which I guess is what makes Filler's run so special, right? Because he wins a world championship and then a U.S. Open. That, just knowing how much tougher nine ball is, and then to still have a run like that. But Dodon, with that break, he can be top three in the world, top four in the world. But he's got to get there anywhere.
So and of all the games, nine ball is the most mental. It is the most mentally challenging, because you are going to see things happening. It looks like the easiest game to play, you know, because, you know, you've got a wing ball wire, but mentally sitting in your chair, if you're watching some of the crazy stuff that happens on the table, that your opponent's getting rolls for you to then get up in your next one and not affect you, that separates the men from the boys, you know, and that's where it becomes a real war of attrition, some of these matches. You know, it's not, people say it's outdated and it's a dead game and everyone should be playing 10 ball. I don't know what you're not seeing, what's going on in people's heads while they're playing. You know, if you played the game, then you know.
Nine on the spot is a different game.
It doesn't matter. Like that, and it doesn't matter
with the template.
I played a tournament this weekend, and I was playing a 700. I was playing a tournament this week. I was playing a 700 Fargo player, and I was in a race to five. I was down 4-2, and I got back hill by basically him making a couple of mistakes and allowing me to the table. And I break the balls, have a straight in one ball, and a straight in 2-9 combination. He did not leave his chair after that for like 6 minutes. He just sat there and just stared at the table for like 6 minutes because of, I mean, that's nine ball, right? I mean, the idea is you make one mistake and it's like the gods punish you for making a mistake in a rack. And you got to sit there and watch your opponent break the balls on hill and have a 2-9 combination wired. It's just not fair. It's a terrible game. It's hard to fade.
But that's it. And then you look at something like the World Championships when it's winner breaks, you know, one of those bad rolls goes against you. It doesn't just cost you one rack. These guys go up there and they put a three pack on you and you think, geez, that little roll there is just, you know, I'm 6-2 down when I had one, you know, one bad roll, I'd have been 3-2 ahead. Now I'm 6-2 down. that gets yeah. you. That's tough to battle against that, you know?
Yeah.
So I do want to highlight really quickly.
I love watching them sweat.
Yeah. Who did John Mora play?
Yeah, I want to highlight John Morris quick because his run was pretty incredible. He plays Roberto Gomez for 9 through 12, wins 7-2. Then he plays Shane Van Boning, wins 7-1. Then he plays Omar El-Shaheen, wins 7-3. Beats Carlo Beato on the hill 7-6. Beats Tyler Steyer 7-5. And then loses in the single elimination. I'm assuming it's a single elimination final because it was a race to 11. So, but he loses to James Aranis 11-7. But that's a pretty... Jim can't hear us. Jim apparently can't hear us. Well, that's a pretty strong run. You might be.
We'll try this. Come back in. Yeah, no, John had a phenomenal
run. I think strong run. It deserves some highlighting, I think. That's pretty good.
Yeah, listen, you beat Carlo Beato, you beat Shane Van Boning playing 10 ball. That in and of itself is a feat, you know, and it shows that it wasn't just fluky, but I mean, 10 ball with a template, you know, and we ain't seen John in a minute. So for him to go and show up and have that kind of performance with some top tier players just shows exactly what he's capable of. And one of John's liabilities has been his 10 ball break. So to see him go and perform like that, handle pressure and take down those games is just,
we can
huge.
Give a shout out to Brian Brown because he was talking about in the comments. He actually said that John Moore was soft breaking and kind of out moving players. Right. I didn't watch it. I wasn't able to watch any of his matches, but that's why not? I mean, he's been playing a lot of one pocket. He's probably working on his game moving stuff. So yeah. Well,
You see that in fights though too, right? You see that in if you watch a UFC fight, you're not just going to see guys going and just throwing haymakers every time. You know, there's different styles. You got to go and adjust depending on who your opponent is.
Rope-a-dope, baby.
Rope-a-dope pool. Oh, you got to like it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys, I'm going to have to bow out, so I'll let you guys finish it off. Thanks for letting me participate. All right, I'll catch you guys next week.
Yes, sir.
Bye-bye. Jimmy, can you hear us, Jim?
Something going on with my earpods. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah, we can hear you.
All right, then I'll take the earpods out.
All right, so let's move on from this and let's discuss very briefly the Iron City Open. Another pretty good field. Looks like Tony Chohan wins the 10 ball over Roland Garcia. Dennis Arcoyo and Josh Roberts get third, fourth. So the 9 ball that they had was won by Dennis Arcoyo. If I can get this thing to work, why won't this work? Come on, you can do it. Dennis Arcoyo beats Josh Roberts in the final. So we have a Josh Roberts sighting. This is the first time I've seen Josh in a while. I got yelled at for not including him in the Moscone Cup discussion. And I don't think that that's – I just don't think that Josh doesn't travel enough. I mean, I don't think it's a talent thing with that. I just don't think he travels enough. And if you're not going to leave – you got to be Justin Bergman talented if you're not going to travel ever and still make the team. And I don't think Josh Roberts is quite on that level. But, I don't know if you guys have an opinion on that or if you want to have an opinion on it. But,
I mean, Josh plays good 9 ball, you know, but you got to play great 9 ball and you got to be consistent. But Josh can put in the work too. I mean, I've been in plenty of tournaments where Josh is at where, you know, he's hitting balls from 9 a.m. and then you fast forward 14 hours later and you'll see him in the back of the tables behind the final table going and still hitting balls, and that's just the way Josh is. You know, he can be a machine at times too. He's got the ability, but
if you go back into the archive with Josh, I said that him and Oscar Dominguez are the most underrated pool players in the entire country. If you go back into the archive from back in the day, I believe that. I think Josh Roberts has the ability to compete with anybody in the country, but he's not out there enough. You don't see him out there enough. So that's just, I guess that's just my opinion on it. So, we can move on from this one. It's another pretty strong field.
My man Tony winning a rotation tournament, man. Give him a little bit of love.
I did. Tony Chohan can play some.
I know, but you got to give him some love. You got Roland, who's been to the finals of a world championship.
Well, yeah, I was just about to say. And Manny Chow is in the field. Jonathan Hennessy.
Manny can play some banks too. Tony's got a real underrated a real underrated rotation game. I mean, I've seen him go and beat like Jeff 9-2 playing nine ball before, you know, a few times. So he can go and get there. Yeah. You know, he's not young, just a one trick pony.
Right? Who, he's Tony, pretty young.
No,
like in his
mid 40s.
Oh shit, I thought you were talking about Manny.
Manny's
No, shout out to Tony. I chatted with him for a little while yesterday. He's going to be coming on to the podcast next week to talk his one pocket matchup coming up. So you guys get to look forward to that. Nice. And he said he's feeling real good with his game. It was kind of interesting. Well, I'm not going to ruin it because I'm going to ask him this question when we do the podcast. But his breakdown of where he sees the match with Alex is really interesting. I think one thing that you don't get from Tony, I think he's a little bit more quiet than – I think he's pretty quiet, but he's a lot smarter. Like, he's a really, really smart dude. And he's super smart when it comes to the game of pool. So I think a podcast with him is going to be pretty cool. I think you guys are going to get really good.
He's a mover.
Yeah, definitely. So, that'll be – I guess that'll wrap that one up. They also had a one pocket, but there's only six people. So there's not really – and they had a banks too, but there was – very limited fields for that. So let's move on to the big topic this week, which is going to be Sky and Carlos. It is beginning, I guess, in 2 days. It starts on Friday. So it's Friday to Saturday. It's going to be streamed by Omega TV, and it's going to be a race to 100. Nine on the spot, nine ball, big table. So I guess, I don't know, Rob, you want to start with this one?
I will comment about the nine on the spot, I like that. Then you don't have an automatic.
It at least makes it. Although I'll tell you this, with how good Dennison Shane looked last time, it was an automatic.
Well, they did get good at, but it wasn't exactly the same ball in the same hole every time.
Yeah, and it's a lot harder to control that one ball and two ball.
Yeah, so
whichever one you decide to try to make.
I like to see that in more, that kind of a rack with nine ball. That's all.
Yep.
Who do I like in this?
Just your thoughts about it.
Yeah. Well, I'm. I didn't know I was going to be put on the spot.
Oh, come on, Rob. How long you been on the podcast?
So, well, I know what you try to do because you do it to Jim all the time. And
I make fun of you significantly less than I make fun of Jim.
Oh, well, okay. I'll admit to that on the air.
Yeah, in public, right? Well, let's hear, Mike, what are you thinking?
I mean, Carlos has been going deep in a lot of events lately, and we've been seeing him a lot. He's a world champion in nine ball. But, I mean, I know a lot of people like Carlo, and I do. I do like Carlo in this matchup, but they forget, man. Sky's got a pretty devastating nine on the spot break when he gets it, whenever he gets it going. He's won Derby City in that format. People forget he was also up on Dennis whenever they played. I mean, all they saw was the end result. But day one, I think Sky was up something like eight or nine games on Dennis going into day one whenever they first played their nine on the spot matchup. And people would consider Dennis right there, seeing how he'd be changing time. So,
I think he took third in the International Open.
Yeah. Yeah, in that format. So I think it's going to be a good matchup. I don't know how much Sky's playing. I know that when it comes to playing like tough competition, obviously Carlos has been playing more because we've seen him around the country. So we'll see how much difference that makes. But I like Carlo. It's tough. Filipinos go and grind hard. So I'm going with him.
Oh, you're going to take him in the match. What do you like for the score?
No, it depends, man. I mean, Sky's got heart. He's not going to quit. But I don't see Carlo going and letting up. You know, I'd say it's around 12, 14 game spread, somewhere around there. You know, I think Sky stays in it, but I just think Carlo gets the job done at the end of the day. And so I just hope it's competitive, period.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
So, Jim, as the resident European who hates gambling, we're gonna make you talk about it. Ha ha.
I don't hate gambling when I'm winning. I'm kind of having a little bit of, I'm having trouble getting my head around this whole match. I only found out about it yesterday when you called me up, Nate, and said we were going to talk about it on the podcast. I'm still trying to figure out why? It there's something about it that doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, like Mike said, Calabiano, he's a world champion, nine ball, you know, he's a monster. He's, for me, he's in that category of, you know, as much as I love Sky, Sky's my guy, you know, he's one of my favorite players, but I just don't see him in the same group as Carlo. I'm kind of wondering who's set this match up, because I personally make Carlo a big favorite for this one. Like Sky went up against Shane and he got everything he needed there. He got the table size, he got the game he wanted, he got everything he needed. And now, you know, yes, I've seen Sky does have a decent break on the for somebody who doesn't play as often with the nine on the spot, and he's played some Euro tours where they do that as well. Carlo's break is unknown for me in that format. I really couldn't tell you whether he's got it down or not, but I'm sure he's going to be practicing it, and he's going to get it down. You know, he knows that, you know, if he can get that down. I don't know if they're playing winter break, or I assume it's probably winter break.
Yeah,
I don't see Sky getting there, and if he does, I don't understand why he's taking this match. There must be, I mean, at the end of the day, it's business, isn't it? And I don't see how this is good business for Sky to play this match, because he either loses it or he kills a lot of the other action of players that would be happy to take him on. I don't really understand it.
That's an interesting point.
There's a lot of players that Sky could be playing that are lower level than Carlo that are going to run if Sky does him at this. What do you then turn around? What do you ask for Sky? You know, if you're a player in that level, just sort of below the Biado, I would say probably Sky's level. If you're a player around about that level, what are you going to ask from Sky? You know, you're not going to give him the 10. You're not going to give him the 7 foot table. You're not going to give him the 10 ball. You're not going to go 9 foot on a what. You know, if he, I think well, Mike, he kills some of his action here.
Yeah, I don't see him getting there anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's not a lot of guys who can get stake playing Carlo. I mean, I personally wouldn't have gone and staked them playing even, but that, you know, that's just me. At the end of the day, though, I mean, Sky's got seasoning, and we've already seen Shane go and play not on the spot against the Filipino before. So, I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense in that regard, but. I mean, there's no rival or anything like that. I think it's just straight up gambling, yeah. You know. But I don't think let's say Sky goes and beats Carlo. Well, is he going to want to go mess with Dennis again? Because I don't think so.
No.
He's already on that same. Like, I agree with what you're saying though, Jim. Like, I think Carlo's in that like Anton Shane that very very first tier of pro players. You know, I think Carlo's. In there, and then right a hair below it, but it's a small hair.
Side of it, but he's in it, right? Yeah, yeah. He's on the bottom side of it, but he's in it. I think.
Yeah, but I mean, I think because it's here in the States, Carlo doesn't necessarily have a lot of like winning experience here in the U.S. And because of Sky's break, and like I'm betting on Carlo because of what I've seen Carlo be made of before, just gambling wise, you know. But I don't know what his break's like in that format. Whereas Sky. I've got a lot to go and fall back on and say, I've seen him be consistent, but those have been like races to 9, races to 11, you know, race to 13, you know, so I haven't seen him going and really do that from wire to wire, because we saw him go and come up short against Dennis the way that, well, I mean, not come up short. I mean, Dennis just swallowed him up from the end of day one and day two and day three, you know? I mean, I think it'll open up some if Sky loses. Who is Sky going to go and play? He ain't going to play no Filipino, not on the spot on the big table. He's going to have to just keep on. He's not going to play any 110 ball, I don't think. So maybe he's going like to have Roland. To go.
I mean, maybe that. Roland Garcia?
Roland. And nobody's going to go and stake Roland playing Sky even. No. Any table, any game. You know, maybe one pocket, but that's about it. And nobody's going to go and stake him.
Yeah, just
that's what I mean, though.
It just doesn't seem that. I don't think he needs to be taking this match. I think there's other matches for him. You know, I don't. Yeah,
well, I think it'd be different if Europeans gambled more. I think that's the thing, because I think there's a lot of guys, like a lot of European players that I can think of who I'd love to go and see Sky and go and gamble with. Yeah. I think Sky's got a lot more experience of gambling, but I'm talking about just like when I look at just the ability side of it, not so much like the seasoning when it comes to gambling, but just the ability side of it. There's a ton of Europeans, nine ball, nine on the spot, that I would love to go and see Sky go and play.
Why wouldn't we want to
see? I think would be fantastic.
We talked about him earlier. Why, if Sky wants to play Carlo Beato, just going off of Jim's point, why wouldn't he play James first? Why wouldn't he play James first? Because if he beats Dodon, he's at least if he's beating Carlo Beato, he's beating James Aranas. There's no way that he beats Carlo Beato and loses to James Aranas.
Hold on a second. I mean, the year Sky wins Derby, Sky wins Derby beating James in the finals. So I mean, don't think James is not on the spot.
Yeah, but you're talking about races to nine. Like we said, race to 100. You've got to be on it all the way, or these big guys are going to swallow you up. Maybe James wouldn't do that.
That goes back to getting steak, though.
All I'm saying is like Carlo Beato is a better player than James Aranas. I think we'd all agree on that, right? Why wouldn't James take that game? Right? I think James would take that game. Why wouldn't Sky play him first then and then go on to Carlo if he won? And then he's getting twice the action. That's kind of what Jim is saying, the idea is you can it's like stairs, right? You take the first step to get to the second to get to the third, and what Sky's doing is he's getting a running start and just jumping over the entire damn thing. So if he wins,
James can get staked in that game though. I don't think there's a line of guys who with deep pockets that are gonna go and say, maybe, I'd be willing to put up 10 or 20,000 to go and find out what James is made of in that long race. I mean, the guy couldn't get there with Kevin. And again, I love Dodon, man. He's great. But that's just the reality of it, I think, in my opinion.
Sky has
been there before.
He's tough. If it's this format, right, the race to 100, I don't remember the exact scores for Kevin and Dodon, but Dodon won one out of those two sets, and he lost like two on the hill. I think the other one, he blew him out, right? I mean, he would have been up in overall.
James was up every set and let the lead get away. He was up something like eight games going to 24 or something on a couple of them. Like he couldn't go and close them. And what is that, Jim? If somebody can't close, what is that?
Dogging it. Mental.
But it's mental though, right? It is. That's what I mean. I would love to go and see Sky go and play a Kachin 9 on the spot, or even an Albin 9 on the spot, or, I mean, a Fedor 9 on the spot, because I think that's a little bit more, you know, in that range, so to speak. You know, maybe you can put those players above Sky a little bit, but I think it's more gambling compared to Carlo.
I'm not saying Sky can't beat Dodon. I'm just saying, why wouldn't Sky take that match? I mean, if you're going to say that he can't get staked,
I think Sky's side would. I just don't think that nobody.
I get that.
Put up the money on James' side to find out.
I'm surprised. There's a U.S. Open coming up. Players coming from all over the world. I'm surprised there's not more matches getting announced. They're going to be here anyway.
Well, we're going to talk about this with Mike in a little bit if he wants to talk about it, because he's announced a couple big matches in the last 2 days.
Because there should be loads of them, really. They're coming over. They might as well.
I heard of a European player wanting to go and get in the Greece gym, a certain reigning world champion that maybe wants to go and gamble a little bit. I heard that too.
Really? Albin wants in a gamble, does he?
That's what I heard. I've heard it like a few times.
Find somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's going to go up again? I've never seen Alan play a big set. It'd be interesting to see if he's got the stamina for it.
Me neither. Yeah.
Because I'd like to see Alan. And we know that Alan can get down on himself sometimes if things aren't going well. If you're in a long set and you're having to grind be good to see that.
But Alan can come with it though. Alan is
the way he fought Alvin's through the
championship pedigree. Yeah. You know, World Cup of Pool, a Championship League pool. A multiple time world champion. Like when it's tough and it's time to get it, like I don't know too many other guys I want shooting that shot besides Albin.
Certainly, when it comes to gambling.
The only thing he hasn't won is the U.S. Open and
the Masters. World
Pool Masters. That's it. I mean, he has every other major title pretty much.
Still young as well.
Yeah.
Still got loads
30,
of time.
30 years old, I think. 31. Yeah. Yeah,
he's an amazing career. He probably doesn't get enough credit for the career he's had. You know, three world finals, won two of them.
Yeah, you're right.
Legend. Mm-hmm. Yeah, already
lost to Neil. Yeah,
that'd be great.
Lost to Neil.
find him some action, find him an, yeah. find him an idiot to play against, who well, wants to go against the Albin
spot. No one's going to stake Albin playing 10 ball, you know, here in the States. It has to be now on the spot, you know. That would have to be the game. I haven't heard who they've been thinking about opponent-wise. He ain't playing no 10 ball, and he ain't playing no bar box. No, but he'll play. I think if they do play, it'll be.
I'm sure he'll play 10 ball if it's the right opponent. He's not going to play Shane. But I guess there really isn't another opponent, is there? Maybe Sky. I mean, maybe that game could happen. 10 ball.
Yeah, who do you like, Nate?
10 ball at Sky.
And by how much? The Carlo and the Sky matchup.
Well, Jim, I guess you don't – let's let Jim finish out as far as your prediction, because you said you don't really see why the match is happening. That I have to assume that that's because you don't think Sky can win. If you had to give a prediction.
No, listen, Sky – I would never say that Sky cannot win it. I don't think he will. But like Mike said, the guy's a fighter. You know, he can get on a run. He can get things going. I personally don't think he can hang with Carlo for a race to 100. If you're talking like 30, 40, maybe he gets there. So I would never bet against Sky. I don't understand, you know, other than Sky just trying to test himself against the best in the world and doing it for his own, you know, where am I? How good am I? I want to play against these top guys. I want to put myself up there. I can understand that point of view, but as a business decision, I think it's a bad decision. Because if he wins it, he kills a lot of action. If he doesn't win it, then what? Yeah, I don't quite understand the match. If it is purely, I just want to challenge the best players I can get. I want to get the best players on the table with me, and put myself up against them. Then all credit to you. Go out there, give it your best shot. But I think you'd need to be getting 20 racks off Carlo to get there, to be honest.
So you're looking at more than a 100-80 type of margin.
I might be being kind, I might be harsh.
10 ball race to 100. You know, Carlo Sorry? Beat Dennis in 10 ball. Carlo beat Dennis a race to 100 in the Philippines. Like, Carlo's the only one who can play Anton even gambling in the Philippines. That's how strong of a player Carlo is.
Yeah, the guy is stone Jim's cold, right. And he's one of. I mean, we talked about it for 5 minutes yesterday. I think anyone who knows anything about pool, if you were to name like your top 10 best rotation players, I think Carlo would be in the discussion for a lot of people. Sky wouldn't for anybody, I don't think.
Yeah, and that was kind of my point.
That's why I mean that Carlo is a level above. He's an elite player.
Yeah,
I think Sky is a champion. He's a fantastic player, but he's not elite.
I have to, yeah. And I guess my thoughts on this is I have to assume that Sky was approached by his backers for this. I can't imagine that Sky was going chasing after this game. I don't, Mike, maybe you know, maybe you don't know. Maybe you don't want to say even if you do know. But I have to assume that this is like backer-generated game.
Yeah, I mean, why? I don't know any guys. Like, you'll go and say... y'all were talking about a match earlier with Dodong and someone else, I forgot, but like any player would want to go and get in for a swing at winning, you know, 10 grand, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, if it was proposed to him, and not only that, but I mean, those guys are getting they're gambling and they're getting guaranteed money. So, why would you go and turn down a paycheck and for a chance to go and make money on top of it, you know?
That's what I was going to say.
If they're just playing on some back table and no one's gonna go and they're not getting none of that shit, I mean, would he go and get staked? I don't know, but I know a lot of people ain't barking at Carlo Beato. I can promise you that, and I mean in the world, there ain't a lot of people barking to play Carlo Beato.
If somebody walked up to me and says I'm going to put you in a match against Shane and I'll stake you the full 20 grand, I'll play it. I get completely pumped, but it's not cost me anything.
And by the way, we're gonna pay you $5,000 just for showing up, Jim.
Exactly, we'll pay you $5,000 even if you score a big donut, you'll still get your $5,000. Yeah, you're gonna turn up, aren't you?
Yeah.
And we'll give a huge shout out here actually to the Omega TV guys, because they do take care of their players real well. I mean, as far as paying them out, from what I've heard, they pay pretty good.
Yep. Yeah. Great. I mean, this is maybe the it's one of the ways that you it has to go in order to get these big matches coming up. You know, it has to be a guaranteed paycheck for both players, you know, and then they don't care who they're playing against. If they're going to continually get their matches, then winning or losing, winning is almost like a bonus. Losing, they're still getting paid, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. Hold on.
Is it right to be like that? Is it? I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to just touch real quick on what Patrick Neal said in the chat, like only Carlo and the promoters win. Listen, I'm going to tell you something. These guys, the fans do, yeah, of course. But listen, the promoters are going and guaranteeing these guys money, but they're gambling too. And what I mean by that is they don't know if they're going to make it up with these pay-per-view buys. They're hoping they do. Ask them how well they did with Fedor and Jeff DeLuna and how great those pay-per-view buys went. And whether or not they lost their asses. So, like, don't think it's just a money grab. They're putting their money where their mouth is. They're helping support the players. So, but they're taking a risk as well. But I like any business, they're hoping to go and crack a nut. You know, but it's not a lock. You know, not everyone's going to be like Shane and Dennis Part 1 where, you know, buyers are through the roof. You know what I mean? And people from all over the world are watching. So, it's not always a guarantee.
Yep.
So yeah, you're whether or not success is based on viewership, we know that myself and Nate from doing the VG10s, you know, and until you've got those donations in, and you don't know if you're breaking even, if there's any money in it, if we're the players
y'all are sweating though, right? Like y'all are there sweating the whole time and trying to put on a face and trying to go on. Y'all are doing commentary and still like, you know, looking at the notifications and seeing if the money's coming in. And you know, but meanwhile, you've been working your ass off for months on end and coordinating.
And we're sweating every single match. I mean, ours is like a tournament thing. It's not just a one against one. And we're sweating every match, hoping that certain players get through because we know exactly more views. And Nathan's actually saying to me, Jim, stop winning your matches because nobody wants to watch you play. You keep putting out our viewership because nobody wants to watch you play.
It's just going down and down and down.
So it was bad business sense for me to win matches.
No, but I'm not going to say that. I mean, and y'all know firsthand, you know, and it's nothing. That's just the way it goes sometimes, you know. But they're trying to go and earn some money or generate some revenue. But they're guaranteeing those guys money, so that's respectable in and of itself, you know, that they're willing to go and risk it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into those things that you'll never know unless you do it. I promise you that. I've been on both sides of these things multiple times. Both as the person running it, the person helping it, the person playing in it, the person watching it. I've been on all sides of this. It, trust me, buy the damn streams and enjoy that side of it because the other side sucks. the other side is terrible.
Even after they lose their ass with Jeff and Fedor, they still kept on going.
Yeah. You
know,
yeah.
Even after they go and lose money. So, hey.
But this might be, I mean, I don't normally buy the streams for the matches that are taking place in the USA because it ends up just keeping me up all night and then I've got to go to work the next day and then I just feel shit for 3 days. But this one I might actually take because, I've got a soft spot for Sky. I'd really like to see him get there against Carlo. But like I said, he's up against, I think, quite heavily, in my opinion.
I'm going on a limb here with this one. And
Rob, what do you think?
I'm going to call Sky 100, Carlo 96.
That'd be a great
sweater.
Match.
Oh, sweater.
Last time I saw Sky play a long set.
That'll cover that.
He would love that.
I mean, it was that'll cover a lot of that. Games he played. I saw more heart in his little finger than I see in a lot of players. I'm behind Sky on this one, and I don't think he cares who he.
You're playing. Absolutely right, Rob. Really, you're absolutely right. Sky does that.
He couldn't care less. He could be playing anybody. He just wants the action, and when he held his little new kid up, and I see this pool players over my lifetime, when they have a child, the next year of their pool playing career, they play out of their minds because they're not playing for themselves anymore. They're playing for their little kid.
When he's playing Dennis, he's got his wife there, his mom there, his son there.
I saw some heart.
They're all sitting there sweating it.
four uncles, 23 aunts.
I think he had cousins. I don't think it bothers him.
You want to talk about some pressure? I mean,
Carlo may beat him because he's a better player, but
you want to talk about pressure. It's pressure for his opponent. If Sky's mom gives you that look, and you're sitting in your chair,
Dennis was just trying to fade Paco. That's all it was.
Wait a second. Is that like the Skyler's mom's got it going on look that you're giving, or what look are you talking about here?
Get the fuck.
They support Sky for sure.
Jim, I got to go back and put a beep in here now. Dang it, you're giving me editing work. No, Deborah's awesome. We all love Deborah.
We do.
I guess my prediction would have been somewhere around 100 to 80. I think Sky can get to about 80, something like that. I mean, if you really – I mean, I think he can get there. I think Carlo – I could see Carlo blowing Sky out by like 25, 30 games. I can't see Sky blowing out Carlo. And if I can't see Sky blowing out Carlo, it's really hard to want to bet that side. I mean, it's just really tough to want to do that. So I would say somewhere 80 to 85, I think, is what Sky gets to, somewhere in that area. And, I mean, I've already bought the stream. I'm excited to watch it. I'm happy to support it. I'm not one of those people that asks for the free streams. I just want to support Pool. So everybody out there that's watching, buy the dang stream and support them. They are doing more for Pool than just about anybody in this industry right now. And they have some huge matchups coming up. So, Mike, did you want to talk about a couple of those announcements you made?
The man, Chang Jun Lin, Shane Van Boning, September 21st, I believe. Venue to be announced, 10 ball, 4 1/4 inch pockets. As long as, this is what I heard, a direct quote, if Chang's on a plane, the match is happening. As long as Chang can get on the plane, they're playing. So, I know there was a lot of big matches they were shooting for, including another European they were trying to get after that hadn't returned a call from what I understand. But Chang Jun Lin is the man, 10 balls a game. And I don't know, the last time they played, Chang had his way. I heard
177.
Yeah, right? But that was more of an exhibition than it was money. This is going to be money.
Well, that wasn't
going to be big money.
That wasn't an exhibition, right? That was the Clash of the Titans that lasted about two matches,
right? That was an exhibition. It was an exhibition. 100%, it was an exhibition. I mean, like, they promoted it differently, but it was an exhibition.
I think that was match number one of the Clash of the Titans that Sully Vision called it. And the idea was you're going to have 8 qualifiers or 16 qualifiers, and it was winner take all for $20,000 or something like that. This was the qualifier.
Fast forward 3 years, they just want to pretend that it never happened.
Well, exactly. So it was an exhibition as far as that goes, because they didn't follow through with it. But I mean, the idea.
I know the players got a piece of streams, I think, if I'm not mistaken, but it wasn't nearly what they were hoping for. But I mean, this is a premier 10 ball matchup. There's not anybody like I probably would rather go and see Fedor go and play a Chang. I don't know, going back to Jim's business prowess, I don't know how much sense that would make from a business standpoint. But because Shane, even though personally I think Shane's lost a little bit on his 10 ball break, he's still the man on the top of the mountain, like in so many people's eyes. So this is just an elite matchup, and I'm pumped. I mean, Chang Jun Lin is a monster. He's in that Carlo Beato, Anton Raga.
But he's leading it.
Koping Chung. Yeah, yeah.
He's
especially
leading
in 10 ball. I mean, Chang's just...
But we
haven't seen him in 2 years. Now, we saw whenever Alex comes back from the Philippines, how he's looked taking a year off. We saw how Dennis doesn't look the same after taking a year off and after COVID. So, you know, we haven't seen Chang Jun Lin in quite some time. Filler has lost a step because for, you know, that stretch, he was intimidating. He was winning everything. He was making every ball. He was doing everything right. He doesn't look as sharp after the year of COVID. So, I mean, I'm not going off the deep end here, but.
I mean, he did win a Euro Tour.
He didn't look like the old filler in the Moscone.
He ran into the
I don't think anybody.
But that's my point though. Like I'm not just picking. I'm not trying to just go and pick on. I'm just saying like the elite players haven't looked like as sharp coming back from COVID. So even though the last time we saw Chang Jin-Lin, he's been like the monster, right? I mean, I'm still like, I want to see what he's been doing. I want to see how he's hitting them, you know.
But this is one of the matches that everybody's been calling for. You know, that's worth watching.
I mean, anytime I can watch Shane in a matchup like this, I'm gonna go for it, because I mean I just love watching Shane play. And I mean, I don't want to be like that person, but we don't have, you know, it's like the Kobe Bryant's last year, right? At the end of the year, Shane's not quite there yet, but mentally he's getting pretty close to there, I think. And then if you talk to Shane, if you're close enough to him to talk to him about personal life, I mean, he's getting closer to retirement than he is, you know, getting back into the swing of things. Every time we're able to see Shane play now, enjoy it. I mean, watch it. Every second that you can possibly, because he's not going to be around that much longer. And once it's gone, you're going to be, you know, left wishing that you could watch it again. And I'm telling you what, like, anytime I can watch Shane play, I'm going to watch Shane play, because that dude is a legend.
I heard it's going to be close to 100,000, and at least so far, just from early numbers, what I heard, it's going to be close to 100,000. And I heard Shane's betting 10 his own. So, you know, he's putting his money where his mouth is, and I know he's been calling for this matchup for quite some time. So I mean, it's huge. I mean, that's like tell the whole pool world huge. It's big.
Yeah. But what else? We want Shane to be going up against, you know, he's take the best one out of Asia, put himself up against them. Go and get the best out of Europe and take him on. You know, these are the matches. You know, when Darren were battling, and then Shane and Jason were battling, he's kind of gone through the generations, you know. Let's go on in, Shane. Let's give the next generation's there, filler. You know, get up against him as well. You know, if you are thinking about hanging your chin up whatever, or taking a step back, go around all the continents and take the best of the best and take them out, you know. That's one way to hang your cues up and say, right, I've taken the best out of every continent, you know.
Yeah.
I'm leaving as a number one, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he started in and he took out the best from his previous generation. He took out Johnny and Earl and Ralph. I mean, Ralph is seemingly never leaving. I mean, he's going to exist forever.
Ralph will outlast everybody.
Yeah, I think Ralph, like the nuclear apocalypse is going to happen. There's going to be like little cockroaches crawling all over the place in like abandoned city streets, and there's Ralph in the corner in the pool
Ralph
room
just still running be there out rolling from balls in and
yeah, like, he's still in the corner running out from everywhere. It's crazy how long Ralph is, and Francisco Bustamante and Warren Kiamko too. Like, those three players are like, I swear you're gonna have those three in a round robin tournament after the nuclear apocalypse, and they're just gonna be stepping on cockroaches and running out from everywhere. It's going to be crazy.
They're like the Rolling Stones. They're never going to die.
Shane and Filler.
No matter what you do to them.
I think Shane and Filler would be the only bigger match you can go and have right now.
Yeah.
Right?
I agree. I think that is the top of the top. That is the number one match.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that the Asian players have the pull that the Moscone players. I think Shane and Jason again. I think Shane and...
Well, yeah, I'm talking about just moving the wire, you know.
I don't know to the casual fan. I mean, the casual fan, I think, knows who Jason Shaw is and knows who Joshua Filler is. I don't know that they know who Chang Jung-Lin is. Maybe they do. As far as like the inside the industry, the people who frequent streams, I think I would agree with that. But I think to the average consumer, Shane and anybody on the Moscone Cup, I think would still move the needle a little bit more. But I could be wrong on that. That's just my thought experiment.
I think just the ultimate matchup, just right now, the ultimate matchup, like Mike said, would be Shane against Filler. You know, the whole Moscone Cup thing, the new king, that's still fresh in everybody's head. You know, they've got a background to it. There's a story behind it. They are the two guys that you see, you know, on the Team Europe and Team USA, and they want each other. They both want to play each other.
I heard Omega and them have been trying. I'm just gonna say I heard Omega and them have been trying to make it happen, and trying and not get anywhere with it. And I don't think believe me, there's plenty of money on Shane's side, and I'm sure they would have no problem raising money on Filler's side to go and make it happen. So, but if one side ain't returning a call, then there ain't much that they can go and do, you know. But I want to ask you real quick, Jim. How's it looking right now for guys in Europe coming to the States? Because I mean,
it's changing on a daily basis. The guys from the UK that are trying to go over for the US Open, there's a GB9 at the same time, and they've booked themselves into the GB9 just in case they can't travel. So that tells you that there's no guarantee that the guys from the UK and also from Europe. I think the UK is in a slightly more difficult situation than Europe, being as how they did the whole Brexit thing. They're not getting the same deal with the States as Europe is. So I think coming from Europe, it's going to be slightly easier, and I think that'll happen if you're double vaccinated and it isn't Pfizer. I think was one of the things. AstraZeneca. Yeah. I think there's situations with that going on. I'm not sure if it's all been done. But again, it's going to be a last-minute decision for a lot of these guys whether or not they can make it over or not. They can say now that things are looking good and then it changes in a week, you know.
That's so brutal, man.
Moving players, within Europe, I think I'm a lot
like, that is such a difficult spot to be in again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know?
I want to ask a question.
Making travel plans and everything.
Because we're all like nuts, right? I mean, we're all like hardcore fans. Maybe not Jim. I mean, he's not going to buy a stream. But the idea, Rob, you're the guy that hates paying for streams. You're the guy who like does not want to ever spend his money. You're sitting on like $15 trillion and you won't spend a nickel of it. What is the stream that you would buy?
It doesn't belong to me. It's my wife's money.
Listen, we're all in the same situation. I got loads of money as well, but it's all my wife's money.
I'm busted. Trust me, Rob. I know.
I don't have anything of my own. I'm quite sure that if my wife was to leave me, she'd cut the pool table in half and take half of it.
God love him.
I'd be left with 7.5 balls.
You'd take half of every one of your cue sticks.
Going after everything.
Yeah. No, there we are. So, Rob, what
you
what match would you
have staff left in the house?
No left.
What's the match you'd get up and pay for, Rob?
Oh, there's no question. I got filler and Shane.
Any others?
I'm paying whatever they want for that. I would pay to see Appleton and Sue Kay play. A race to 100. I would pay for that. So
the match that I actually really want to watch. I want to watch Alvin Ocean versus Jason Shaw. I want to see that match. I think that'd be awesome.
Sure. Game. Sure. There's some three question matches that I would watch.
Nine ball, nine on the spot.
Nine on the spot.
I like Alvin.
Maybe.
At the moment,
I think it'd be awesome to watch.
At the moment, I'd like Alvin on. I don't think Jason's playing enough. But I can tell you, I would not pay. I would not pay for Shane against Filler. I think if that match gets set up, I think I'd probably come over and be sat inside watching it.
Because
that's a once in a decade match. That's not going to happen every single time, you know.
But that's why, like, you can't. This is what annoys the hell out of me sometimes, man. Like, Alex and Dennis aren't playing like the way Alex and Dennis were playing 3 years ago in one pocket. And now there's talks about them finally getting together. Like, I don't want to watch it. If, let's say, you know, in 2 years, Shane is a shell of himself, then I don't want to watch it anymore.
No, I want them in the prime.
Yeah, we want to watch Mayweather and Pacquiao when they're at the top, you know.
I want the guy that wins it. I want no excuses. I want them to be able to sit back. I want Shane to be able to leave and say, listen, he beat me up. He beat me in my prime. Or I want Filler to be able to leave and say, listen, I'm playing great and I got beat. You know, I don't want anyone saying afterwards, because you know what the pool war is like. Oh, this happened and that happened and this is not right and it wouldn't have happened 5 years ago.
Always
like
be
you
an
said.
Excuse, Jim. No. There will always be an excuse.
Yeah, get them together and get them.
You're not a real pool player if you don't have an entire list of
excuses ready. I'd probably didn't make a trip for that to watch that one.
I would like to see a match where there is a player who does something exceptional, like can run 16, 17. I mean, it's got to happen sooner or later, you think, but it doesn't. You get fives and sixes and sevens and maybe pushing eight.
Well, Dennis ran a 10. Dennis ran a 10.
He had a 10 on that bar table.
Day one, nine on the spot. Bigfoot.
Okay.
Yeah. Not Bigfoot.
That's not easy to do with that nine on the spot break.
No, that is not. Damn.
He ran a true 10.
That's exceptional. That's, you know, that's what I'd be watching for, you know. That kind of one chance out of 100 where somebody really does something.
11.
And it was 11 from the one, too, right? It was 11 from the one from the previous rack, right? I mean, it wasn't a...
No, when Shane, Shane hung the 7... Oh, no, yeah. Shane hung a 7 or something, and then that was the first one. But then after that first one, then he ran a true 10 after that. I remember I was there. I remember saying to a friend of mine, I said, it's going to cost them 5. And then all of a sudden, 5 went by like in a blink of an eye. I'm like, oh, wow. But like you don't appreciate it till like he's on 8 or 9, because then you're like, it's kind of like when you're watching a baseball game, and if it's a perfect game, like you don't even realize it till it's the 7th inning or something, right? Because at the beginning it's just like, oh, it's just Dennis running out, like you take it for granted, you know. And then now, and on hindsight, you get to be like, that was something pretty special. Yeah. You don't get to see every day at all, you know.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, I guess with that, did you have a couple questions for Jim, Rob? Do you want to ask Jim?
Well, you know, we talked last week a little bit about shitheads. And, you know, well, anyhow, Jim, the subject came up and we kind of ran with it. And then names came up. First.
And you lots of actually thought about me. Well, thanks.
We all know. You weren't one of them, no, but
well, you were for me.
We talked a little bit about shitheads in pool. And we made fun of it and everything, and it was okay. Have you ever heard the term dirty pool in your billiard career?
Dirty pool, I mean, I could have, not as a specific saying, but I guess it can have many different... many levels, pool is dirty when it comes to gambling.
Here's an example of what dirty pool would be. Say you're playing 8-ball, and there's no rules. If you want to shoot your opponent's ball into a corner or behind a bunch of balls, you can do that. And we used to play that way and gamble on those games where there were no rules. And so I was just wondering if, and of course, shitheads showed up at these kind of places to play and gamble. And I was wondering if you have seen anything like that in your European career of pool. I think this is strictly American.
There's not something. We have, just like anything else, people play, certain people play different rules and different games. You know, if you're talking about 8-ball, then depending on the table size, we have different rules where you can play your opponent's ball if you go cushion first on the small table or whatever you do. But dirty pool, where there's just no rules. And going in and having, as you call them, shitheads coming in gambling, it's not a big thing, really. Hustling doesn't really seem to be a big thing over here. You don't really get people, an unknown guy just walking into a pool hall and saying, you know, who wants to play me for 50 bucks, 100 bucks? It doesn't really happen, you know? No, I think it's just that sort of culture isn't really... Really,
we just got it here in the States.
Europe. that's why all these European players come over to the United States if they want to learn that side of the game. You know, if they want to get battled hard and try and earn a little bit of money through money matches, because you don't get it over here in Europe. Okay. It's very difficult to get that kind of action over here in Europe. And if you want that, you know, the States is a place to go. And then you've got all the players. They'll go to the States or they'll go to the Philippines and they'll do their 3-month road trips or whatever and try and get as much action as they possibly can and pick up a few tournaments in between. You can't do that in Europe, really. It just doesn't happen. Yeah.
Maybe that's why pool has a different representation there. Who knows?
Well, I mean, being professional, right, Jim? Be professional.
But you can still be professional within that circle of pool. You can do it and do it with a professional attitude. You're not going to get an Albin coming over there. Let's say Albin comes over and does his tour around there. He's not going to be playing in flip flops and shorts when he's on a stream. You know, he's going to be dressed properly when he's on a stream, and he knows that people are watching. He's going to come over there and he's going to be dressed appropriately. He might not have his full matchroom gear on, but he's going to be dressed smartly and appropriately. He won't have flip-flops on. He won't have his baseball cap on back to front. And he's all this crap as if he's just walked in off the street. He's going to look like a proper pool player. You know, and that's what I mean a little bit about the professional attitude. He can still go there if he wants and do a three-month tour, gambling and getting action from people, whether or not anyone will give him any is a different story. But he can still go there and do it as a professional pool player because he's got it's a professional attitude and it's how he puts himself forward to the rest of the pool room. When he walks into a pool room, people know, even if they know nothing about pool, when Albin walks into a pool room somewhere, they're going to know that he's a pool player. You know, there's a lot of these players that are very, very, very top pool players. If they were to walk into a pool room over here that was full of amateurs who are just in having a beer, he's just going to end up blending in and looking like one of them. That's not a professional, in my opinion. You're going when you walk into a pool room as a professional pool player, you're at work. Even if you don't have your cues with you, you're there as a pool player, and you should treat it like that. I believe.
Yeah. Nice.
Can't argue with that.
It's a good way to end the show right there. Preach to him.
Yeah.
This is why we bring on Jim. Certainly not for his looks.
Come on.
Well, opinions are important.
They're like, yeah.
That's my wife.
They're like, assholes.
Jim, I got to bleep so many things because I'm not going to bleep any of them. It's okay.
Don't bleep. Well, it's live anyway. People have heard it now.
That's true. All right. Well, we can close it out there, I suppose. That's another good week, another good podcast here. And I appreciate you guys joining me as always.
Thank you. Boys. Thanks for inviting me. Nice to see you again, guys.
Thank you very much.
Rob, you have a very pretty shirt. Oh, and I should say, I'm going to, you know, record over this and like throw it into the podcast. But we actually are going to, we got more apparel, as you can see on my wall back here. So if you want yourself a long sleeve t-shirt for the first time ever, we have them. And there's a comment on Facebook on how you can get those. Rob, that's a short sleeve. But if you would like to get yourself a long sleeve t-shirt, they are 20% off today only. So they're going to be $25. So if you're tuning in and you want to get yourself one of these, reach out to the podcast page. Or if you're on YouTube, send an email to queue it up. podcast@gmail.com, or I don't know, do something. You're resourceful, you're internet people, you can figure it out and you can get yourself one. So with that, let's close out.
What Nate actually means is you're getting 20% off. That means the sleeves, so you get a normal t-shirt.
No, I'm just gonna take away a strip in the back. What you can't see is
give you a long sleeve t-shirt, 20% off, so sleeveless.
Oh, there you go, Bill. If I can get you to
autograph. Oh, you need to autograph one, Jim.
What's that? Oh, Bill Askin says if I autograph one, he'll buy one. There you go.
All right. Well, with that, we'll close it out. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.
Cheers, guys.
See you, boys.
Adios, fellas.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard and you want to contribute to the future content that will be made, consider joining the podcast's Patreon at www.patreon.com/queueitup. Becoming a Patreon of the podcast will help to create all of the future content that the podcast will have. Special shout out to Dave Peters, Aaron Taylor, Pete Silsby, Morgan Lupton, Ben Young, Robert Miller, Andy Morse, and Bill Pelham for your generous contributions to the podcast's Patreon. If you ever need any more information on what the Patreon system is or how you can contribute outside of the Patreon, please reach out to the podcast or Nate himself. If you would like to contribute to the podcast for free, consider sharing any podcasts or the podcast page on Facebook itself. Also, leaving a review and a rating if you listen through iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Queue It Up podcast.